What's going on, guys? My name is Tim Gray. I am the Public Information Officer with the WKU Police Department at Western Kentucky University. Hey, I'm excited to speak with you guys. I'm excited about what we're going to talk about here today, right? Finding your why, right? But before we get into that, I want to tell you guys a little bit about myself, okay? So I'm born and raised out of Nashville, Tennessee, right? So right down the road from Bowling Green, Kentucky. I grew up in the south side of Nashville, Tennessee. And as I tell folks, so I didn't grow up in the projects, but I grew up right next door to them, right? Edge Hill Projects. I come from a family of seven of us, right? My mom and my dad was my brother, my older sister, and we had two nephews, right? And so growing up in the south side of Nashville, for us, dad really wasn't, he really wasn't a big part of the picture, right? He was there, he was by dad by title only, but he didn't really contribute a whole lot to the family. So for us, especially myself and my brother, we had to grow up early, right? So in growing up in Nashville, one of the things that we had is that we had the Edge Hill Public Library. Now remember I told you, I grew up next door to the Edge Hill Projects. So you can probably guess where the Edge Hill Public Library is located. You're right, in the heart of the projects, right? So every summer we had these summer reading projects, right? So going into the next school year, we would be assigned some book reports, and we would have to read some books throughout the summer, and then we would have to do book reports on them, be ready to turn them in at the beginning of the fall semester. Well, back then, now y'all are fancy now. You've got the technology, you've got the iPhones, the iPad, the Wi-Fi, all of that. We didn't have that. We had dial-up AOL, right? So we would go to the public library in order to check out our books, conduct our book reports. Well, mom was pretty much a single mom. She was working two or three jobs just to make ends meet, make sure that she could take care of the entire family, right? Well, we couldn't stay at home by ourselves because, again, we were young. So we would spend the majority of our time going to the Edge Hill Public Library. So while there, we conduct our book reports. Usually I'd meet up with a couple of my teammates, guys that I grew up with playing football, playing basketball. We used to kick it out in the neighborhood. We would spend time there at the library because we also went to school together. Well, it would be late in the evening. And so that was kind of our safe place to be while mom was at work, right? So later in the evening, as the night fall, the library would begin to close, we'd grab our stuff, we'd grab our books, we'd grab our backpacks, and we would head out of the library, take a little side trip down the alleyway, and we would head home, right? Well, when we'd be walking, then we noticed maybe after that second day we were at the library, the police would roll up. So the police would come up, they hopped out of the police car, they say, hey guys, we need you guys to get over there by the fence. We need you to, you know, put your hands on the fence, drop your book bags, and we need you to assume the position. I didn't have a clue as to what they were talking about. I didn't know the position. I was like, you're going to have to instruct me, help me out, teach me what's the position, right? So we go over there, we put our hands on the fence, we spread our feet and all that kind of good stuff, and they would pat us down. Right. So then after they pat us down, wouldn't find anything, they would get back in their police cars and they would cruise on. The week would go on, maybe a couple of days later, we're leaving the library, we're heading down the alleyway. Right. And it happened again. The police car would pull up. Officer would hop out, say, hey, guys, I need you guys to get on the fence, put your hands on the fence, drop the book bags. Now, at this point, now I'm curious. Now you're going to have to explain to me, okay, what's going on? What's the problem, right? Well, I finally asked the officer, and one of them simply said, well, we got a call about some suspicious subjects. I was like, okay, is that us? He said, yep, you matched the description. And I said, okay, well, you're going to have to explain to me what was suspicious about us, right? He's like, well, you guys, it's about 8, 9 o'clock at night, and you guys got backpacks. It's because we go to school. That's why we got the backpacks. Well, what's in the backpack? Well, there's books. Officer looks at me, there's no way there's books. This late at night, you guys are up here in the projects, you're walking down this alleyway, there's no way there's books. No, there's books. Like, you can check the bag. There's nothing but books in there, right? So this would happen time and time and time again all throughout the summer. So as you can imagine, that frustrated the heck out of me, right? I got bothered by that. I mean, sometimes to the point I'd be upset. I go home, I talk to mom, I'd be in tears, I'd be upset, she'd be upset, she'd be frustrated, right? And so from that point on, I had nothing but a negative outlook toward law enforcement. It didn't matter whether they were white, whether they were black, whether they were male, whether they were female. None of that mattered to me. I said, man, I don't want to have anything to do with law enforcement, right? But I need to set the stage for you guys about something. You see, my mom, she worked at the Tennessee Prison for Women. My dad, he worked at River Bend Maximum Security. So both of them were in the correctional business all throughout my life growing up. Matter of fact, my dad worked at the River Bend Maximum Security for 42 years. My mom, she worked at the Tennessee Prison for Women for 35 years, right? So I saw the inside of a jail early. I knew early on in life, look, I don't want to go to jail, right? I would always have people ask me, they say, well, Officer Gray, man, how come, you know, so maybe you were just a straight and narrow kid. Maybe you were just kind of the square, you know, you just was like, oh, I'm going to be the goody two shoes because I got the parents in law enforcement and all that kind of stuff. I said, no, I just saw the inside of a jail. I knew I didn't want to be there, right? So I just simply didn't make decisions that would have me ended up where they worked, right? It was that simple. It wasn't complicated, right? So as you move forward, as I move forward in life, I finished high school. I went on to college, right? I started at Carson Newman College. It was a small private college about 30 miles east of Knoxville. I always tell people, if you're ever traveling toward Knoxville, you get lost, you'll probably wind up in Jefferson City. The only thing going on in Jefferson City was Carson Newman College and Walmart, right? So after about a year or so at Carson Newman, I transferred. I came to Western Kentucky University, met a lot of amazing people. But while I was there, I also found my passion. My passion was people, right? And that's the thing about me. I love people. It's not a whole lot you can really do about it, right? I love helping people. So that became my passion. So I got involved in this thing called Housing and Residence Life because my other side passion was race relations, right? Building that gap, having those conversations, those tough conversations, right? That we often find ourselves difficult in having them. Right. We're talking about them in our living room. We're talking about them in, you know, in the privacy of our homes. But when it comes to engaging people who don't look like us, engaging people who are different from us, man, that oftentimes can be a different subject, difficult subject. So I wanted to change the narrative on that. Right. I wanted to chase that passion. I wanted us to become a better society when it comes to having those difficult conversations. So I got involved in Housing and Residence Life. Loved it. Loved every bit of it. Well, I didn't know a whole lot about the Bowling Green area. Again, I wasn't from here. I had just recently transferred here. So as time goes on, I remember I was out. I was having lunch with some friends. We were at a restaurant not too far from campus. And so I was traveling back and I said, man, hey, before I go back to campus, I want to make a loop around the neighborhood. I want to get to know some of the streets, get to know some of the areas. So I started making a loop and I turned up this side street. I didn't think anything was wrong. It looked like an alleyway. I turned up the side street. Well, next thing I know, I see blue lights. And I'm thinking, oh, man, like, what is going on, right? So I pull over, and you know what? I get nervous, right? So I do everything that I was taught when I was young. Put my hands on the steering wheel, keep them at the 10 and 2. I'm adjusting my side view mirror. I'm adjusting my rear view mirror, right? And I'm like, okay, no sudden movements, right? So I look in the side view and I see the officer, he's approaching. And as he gets up to my window, right, he taps me on the window. So I reach over with my one hand, one finger. I'm over exaggerating at this point. I let the window down, right? So there's the officer. He's there. He's talking to me. He's like, hey, man, listen, you know, you didn't do anything, you know, too wrong, anything too bad. This is actually a one-way street, right? So he's like, you can relax. Everything's good. I didn't feel like relaxing. I said, I can't relax right now, right? You're making me nervous. You hit me with the blue lights. In fact, you even hit me with the whoop whoop, right? So I was like, no, I can't relax right now. So I was like, okay. He's like, but actually, that's not what I wanted to talk to you about. I said, oh. Okay, well, talk to me. Well, what do you want to talk about? He said, well, I actually wanted to give you this packet. I'm like, what's in the packet, right? He's like, well, it's an application to the police department. Okay, I'm like, but you couldn't call me. Like, you couldn't text me. Like, we couldn't just go to lunch, sit down, have a conversation about it. Like, you had to pull me over. He's like, well, I was just kind of seizing the opportunity. I said, okay, I'll take the packet, but no, thank you. I'm not interested, right? Are we done with this traffic stop? Okay, cool. I rolled my window up. He left. I went on about my business. Life moves on. A couple of years went by. So at this point, I then became a hall director, graduated, finished my undergrad, and I became a hall director, right? So now I'm in the position of where I oversee RAs, the very position that I used to be in, and a residence hall of about 800, 900 plus residents. So one day I hop in my vehicle. It was one summer, I was getting ready to leave the parking lot, leave campus, run to the store. Next thing I know, I look up in my rearview mirror and I see blue lights. I'm like, you gotta be, I haven't gone too far to do anything, right? So I look up, I see the blue lights. It's another police officer. So again, my hands are on the steering wheel, adjust my side view, adjust my rear view. I see the officer walking up. He taps me on the window. I roll the window down, right? He looks at me. He says, hey, listen, you didn't do anything wrong. My chief just wanted me to give you this packet. What's in the packet, right? So he says, oh, well, it's an application. This looked a lot like the previous packet that I got before. Right. So I said, an application. Well, oh, an application to the police department. We've seen you around campus. We thought you would do, you know, you look like you could handle yourself extremely well. You seem to stay in shape. We thought you might be a good fit for our police department. And at this point, I'm like, OK, but do you and your buddies, do y'all not talk? Right. Do y'all not communicate? Because I told your first buddy no. Right. At this point, I'm telling you, heck no. Like, I have no interest in wanting to be a part of the police department. Right. So I said, hey, listen, out of the kindness of my heart, I'll take the application. But please go back, tell the chief, no, thank you. I'm not interested. Right. So I took the application, rolled up the window, and I headed out. I minded my own business. Now, something I need you to be mindful of. I would talk to my mom on the phone pretty often. Nashville was just an hour down the road. So when I got the opportunity, I would also leave. I would go home to Nashville, go visit the family, check in on everybody, see how everything was going. Well, when I would call my mom, we would have some conversations about life. And many of those conversations was about police officers, right? Not so much in the town that I was in here in Bowling Green, right? But just police officers across the nation, across the country. Because I saw some things going on the news that I was like, man, this is egregious. I can't believe this is happening. So I would call my mom. I would complain, right? I'd pick up the phone. I would text her, complain. When I would get in my truck, I would hit the road, I-65 down to Nashville. I would get off Wedgwood area, right? I'd go to her house, 1102 Lawrence Avenue. I'd go in the house, walk through the door almost immediately when I walked through the door, complain about police, right? So later that summer, time fast forward, I go home, I go see mom. You guys know the drill. There's something I've got that I'm complaining about. So I sat down with mom. I said, hey, listen, mom, I need to talk to you for a minute. She says, okay, what you got? Now, the thing I need y'all to understand about my mom's a beast, right? She, okay, like in every aspect of the word, mom's a beast. She's not the kind of mom that you walk through the door and she, you know, she's got a cup of milk for you and a little plate of warm cookies and she's patting you on your butt, telling you, I love you. Hey, how are you, son? Like, that's not my mom. Mom wants to know, okay, why are you here? Right? Like, I raised you. I sent you off to college. Like, well, why are you here? Right? And I said, oh, mom, hey, listen, aren't you happy to see me? Right? And so I sat down with mom. I got to talking with her, and she's an amazing woman. And so as I got to sit down talking with her, I said, hey, listen, I need to talk to you about something. She says, okay, talk to me. What you got? I said, well, you know, I'm on the campus of Western Kentucky University. She said, yeah, absolutely. I said, well, the police department, they've been after me. She's like, oh, no. What did you do? I said, no, mom, it's not that kind of party. Like, it's not that kind of situation. I said, you know, they've actually been interested in me becoming a part of the police department. Can you believe that? She said, oh, okay. She said, when are you going to join? Mom, are you serious right now? She's like, yeah, no, absolutely. When are you going to join? I said, mom, okay, but you remember when we were growing up, when we were yay big, right? Edge Hill Projects, Edge Hill Public Library, me and my buddies, we were getting stopped like almost every other night as we would be leaving, walking home. We had the back. She said, yeah, sure, absolutely. She said, but what does that have to do with WKU Police Department? I said, okay, all right. So I see what you're doing. I can respect that. Okay, but mom, you've been watching the news. You've been seeing what's going on in Chicago. Right. You've been seeing what's been going on out in L.A. You've been seeing what's been going on in all these other different states. Right. You've been seeing all of these situations that involve law enforcement, that involves police officers, especially unarmed individuals. Like, come on, mom, you've been seeing it. She said, yeah, sure. She said, I see it all the time. You know me, I watch the news every morning. She said, but what does that have to do with Bowling Green, Kentucky? So I told y'all, mom's a beast, right? She plays no games. She says, son, I want to share something with you. She said, you remember when you were back in high school? You were freshman in high school. I said, yeah, some great years. She said, yeah, absolutely. She said, remember you played football? You know, you were starting quarterback. She said, I said, yeah, I mean, you know, I was kind of, absolutely. She said, y'all had a pretty good team. I said, yeah, we were kind of some beasts. We were pretty good. She said, yeah, but you weren't always. Told y'all, mom's a beast. I said, mom, like, why are you crushing my spirits right now? She said, no, son, I'm not trying to crush your spirits. I'm not trying to rain on your parade. She said, but I need to put something in perspective for you. See, when you were a first year high school student and you started on varsity, you were big man on campus, right? Everything was going extremely well. Y'all were off to a great start. You guys had a quarterback. Absolutely. He was a phenomenal athlete. I've never seen anything like him, right? Well, as the season went on, we began having a lot of issues out of him. He just wouldn't show up for practice on time, and he would show up. He might have food, you know, with him and all this kind of stuff. Like, he didn't put a whole lot into the whole team aspect. Coach had finally had enough, right? And so there came a point in the season where the coach sat us all down at the end of one practice, and he said, hey, listen, I'm done with him. I'm washing my hands of him. If you guys want him on your team, then you're going to vote him to keep him on your team. If you don't want him, then you're going to vote him to boot him off. So it was like, okay, are you serious, coach? I said, absolutely. We're in this thing. We're either in this thing all the way or we're not in it at all. So we took a vote. Majority voted to get rid of him. Like, hey, he's not all the way in. So we got rid of him. Coach then came back and said, oh, okay, all right, great. Now that y'all have taken care of that business and we can move on, the second piece of business is that we have to replace him. And the replacement quarterback is going to be Tim Gray. Looked at me and like, you didn't have that conversation with me. Like, we didn't discuss this, right? But it's what happened. We finished up the season. We did pretty well, right? Well, that was the first time we then had the opportunity to go to the playoffs. Hadn't been in quite some time. First playoff game of the season, Hendersonville High School. We went to Hendersonville, and y'all got to understand, they play football under a whole different set of circumstances down there, right? These are some thoroughbred guys that really knew how to ball. And she said, son, I remember going down there, and you remember what the score was at halftime? I said, mom, I don't really want to talk about it. She said, oh, no, we got to talk about it. The score at halftime was 65-0. We were losing that bad. Like, it looked like a crime scene. There should have been yellow tape all over that football field because we were getting beat that bad. Usually at halftime, you go in, you make some adjustments, right? You tend to some injuries, you get rehydrated. Coaches usually got some kind of motivating speech for you. He's like, come on, guys, we can do this. Let's rally the troops and all this kind of stuff. My coach didn't have that kind of speech, right? He looked at me and he just said, Tim, seriously, for the love of all things, just throw the ball. Like, just throw it. I don't even care if we don't catch it. Just throw it, right? So we come out and we get done with our warm-ups. We head over to the sidelines. We're getting ready to start the third quarter. But I look up over in the stands. I swear to you, all our fans had gone. Like, I didn't even see the pep bus anymore. Like, in fact, I think I remember looking over for our cheerleaders and I didn't see a single pom-pom. Like, even there. I think the cheerleaders had left, right? But I remember looking up and just over there in the corner, there was one voice that still kept cheering. That was Mama Gray. I mean, she's cheering as if it's a tight game. Come on, guys, we can do this. Come on. Come on, guys, y'all got this. New game, new ball game, 0-0. Let's go, guys. I'm like, Mom, like, stop, right? Like, stop. Like, this isn't funny, right? I remember one of my teammates, he bumped me. He said, is that your mom up there? I was like, don't even make eye contact, right? Just stop. Just don't even make eye contact with her. So we went on. We didn't do well. Like, the score got worse. In fact, I think they put in their third string and they ran the score up on us as well. It was that bad. But she said to me, she said, son, I don't share that story with you to crush your spirits. I share that story with you because I want to talk to you about perspective. And that's what I want to talk to you guys about today. Perspective, right? So my mom says simply this. She says, son, I'm a firm believer that how you view what you do will always affect how you do what you do. She says, so you got to remember, early in the season, when everything was going extremely well, you had no problems. Everybody was cheering, everybody was clapping, everybody was having a good time, everybody's high-fiving, patting each other on the backside, right? Everybody knows what to do when you're winning. Everybody knows what to do when everything is going extremely well. But the question that I have for you, when you hit challenges, when you hit adversities, right? When you hit a situation or a circumstance that is no longer what you once thought it was, right? And now all of a sudden you got to deal with it, man, how do you respond to it? Y'all didn't respond. So here you are, over the past few years, you've been up on campus, you've been texting me, complaining. You've been calling me, complain. You come home, you visit, you sit down, you eat my food, you complain. And now you got the opportunity to be a part of the change that you want to see, but all of a sudden you don't want to have anything to do with it? She said, that's not the kind of son I raised you to be. I'll see you in 4 months. Now get out of my house. Like, Mom, what happens in 4 months? Oh, that's when you'll be graduating from the police academy. Good luck. Been in the police department 9.5 years. What was I supposed to do, right? I mean, Mom tells you, yep, you get out of my house and go to the police academy. Because the thing that my mom needed me to understand was that it's easy to be on the sidelines. It's easy to be a critic. Anybody can sit up there and be a critic. Anybody can wake up from the comfort of their own bed, from the comfort of their own couch, throw on their little house slippers, right, and just sit up there and critique everybody else. That's easy. But the difficult part is when you go out there and you want to be a part of the change that you want to see, is that when you make it up in your mind and you say, hey, you know what? Man, I'm going to change this. Oh, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to give everything that I've got, because I've been sitting back and I've been complaining about this. I've been saying, man, for the longest time, man, police should do this. Man, I think police officers, man, I think they really should consider changing this. They should really consider changing that. If they don't change this, man, you know, it's not going to go over well. Because I said for the longest time, right? I said, man, if we don't change this thing in law enforcement, if we don't change how we operate, if we don't change how we do what it is that we do, if we don't change our perspective, things are going to get worse before they get better. But the thing I need you guys to remember, this was before Ferguson. This was before any of the riots. This was before any of the extreme backlash that you see law enforcement is facing today. This was before all of that. Does that make me prophetic? No. But it just simply made me an observer of my own community. It simply made me an individual who looked out and said, man, okay, look, you see something that can be changed. You see something that needs to be different. You see something that, man, you can go out there and you can either just keep complaining or you can change your perspective, right? You can shift your perspective, make the adjustments that you need to make, go out, put on the uniform, put one foot in front of the other, and get going with this thing. And that's what I did. Because I'm a firm believer that perspective drives performance every day of the week. How a person views what they do will always affect how they do what they do. So here's my question for you, right? I've got an activity for you that I want you guys to do. Because my question is this: how do you view yourself? How do you view your life? If I came over to you and I simply asked you to tell me, man, who are you? What are you about? What makes you amazing, right? What makes you amazing? Now, some of you will sit up there and simply say, oh man, you've got to be crazy. Like, who is this guy, right? So here's what I want you to do. I want you to grab a piece of paper. Doesn't need to be fancy, doesn't need to be anything crazy, right? It can have lines, it can not have lines, it can be a note card, right? Grab a paper from your neighbor. Like, if you don't have any, right, grab paper from your neighbor. If your neighbor doesn't have any paper, right, go up to the chalkboard, okay, or the dry erase board, right? Doesn't matter. But I need you to do me a favor. Right there on that paper, I just need you to draw me a line. Just a vertical line, right down the middle, right? And on the left side of the paper, I need you to write at the very top, I need you to write the word amazing. That's it. Just write the word amazing. Now, for the next, I'll give you a minute to a minute and a half. I need you to write down everything that makes you amazing. Yep, I said it. Everything that makes you amazing. Go ahead, take your time. All right. Now that you've listed everything that makes you amazing, I need you to look over on the other side of your paper, right? Just to the right side of that line. And at the very top, I need you to write the words super duper amazing. Yep, I said it. Super duper amazing. Don't worry, I've got it spelled out for you right there, right? Just want you to put that at the top. Now what I want you to do is I want you to take another minute and a half, and I want you to write down every single thing about you that makes you super duper amazing. Go ahead. I'll see you in just a minute. Okay, so now that you've got that down, I want you to put your pencils down. I want you to put your pens down. And I want to make sure you're looking at me right now, because I need to make sure that you get this. Let me ask you a question. You don't have to raise your hands. You answer this internally. How many of you struggled listing the things that made you amazing? Then how many of you struggled when you went over to the other side and I asked you to list the things that make you super duper amazing? Be honest. Now I need you to get this. There is nothing more frustrating to me. I'm not talking about as Officer Gray, right? I'm not talking about as the police. I'm talking about as a man. I'm talking about as a human being who loves people. There is nothing more frustrating than when I see young people struggle to list the things and to identify the things that make them absolutely amazing. Everything about you is amazing. Some of you, you weren't even supposed to be here today and you're here. That makes you amazing. Some of you, you come up from a family, well, man, you were like myself. Mom was having to take care of so many of you guys working two or three jobs just to make ends meet. Your shoes don't match. Your socks don't match. You're struggling. You're trying to figure out, man, where's my next meal going to come from? Man, my clothes don't look like my friend's clothes. Man, my hair doesn't look like my neighbor's hair. Like some of you come into life and you come into this school every single day and you have that thought on your mind and you're trying to figure out, man, ain't nothing about me amazing. Everything about you is amazing. Some of you, you're sitting up there, you're thinking, okay, well, I don't have any of those problems. Like everything on the outside, you know, it looks good. I come from a home. I come from the nuclear family home, right? Like I come from the mom, the dad. I've got the brother. I've got the sister. I've got the dog. I've got the house with the picket fence, right? But still, they don't understand my internal struggles. They don't understand that when I walk through this door every day, there are things that I'm faced with. I'm going through my anxiety. I'm dealing with my depression, right? I'm dealing with my lack of security, right? I got some insecurities that people on the outside look at me and they think, man, she's got everything good. Man, he or she, they got everything going for them. Man, they look like everything is fine, right? Even you, yeah, you, you're amazing. Some of you are sitting here right now, right? I tell people this. In life, there are three storms. You're either in a storm, coming out of a storm, or you're headed into one. And there's somebody right now within the sound of my voice, you're sitting there and you're in the midst of your storm and nobody knows it. You're in the midst of your storm. You're out there on the boat. There's nobody else around. There's no ship that's coming. And all that you have is your boat and an oar. And you're sitting up there trying to figure out how am I going to get through my storm? I need you to row your boat. Come on, guys. I need you to row your boat, right? I need you. Don't wait on the ship. The ship may never come, right? But what you have right there in your boat is everything that you need. You have you. You have your ability. You recognize that you are amazing and you have an oar. I need you to get to rowing your boat. I need you to weather the storm. At some point, you're going to have to realize, okay, I've got an option. I can either do nothing or I can do something about it. The difficult things that you may be facing, the pain that you may be experiencing, the pain may not be your responsibility, but the healing is. Ah, come on, come on. I'm gonna say it again because I believe repetition deepens the impression. The pain may not be your fault, but the healing, that's your responsibility. But I'm here to tell you today that I believe in you. I believe in every single last one of you, and I believe that every last one of you is amazing. And it's time for you to believe that you're amazing. But why? Why, Officer Gray? I have everything going against me, right? I have everything going against me. You don't know what people say about me. You haven't heard what some of my people who I used to think were my friends, you don't know what they say about me. I got a news flash for you, and I need you to key this in. If you need to pick up your pencil, if you need to pick up your pen, and if you need to jot this down, then I need you to jot this down. But I need you to hear me, and I need you to feel me on this. What someone else thinks of you is none of your business. It doesn't matter what they say about you. It doesn't matter about what they think about you. It matters what you say about you. Some of you, you may have never had a teacher that told you you were amazing. You maybe never had a mom that told you you were amazing. You maybe never had a dad that told you were amazing, right? I don't know. Maybe you walked out your house and even the dog looked at you kind of sideways this morning like you were kind of crazy, right? I don't know. But if you don't get anything out of our time with it, come on. If you don't get anything out of our time, I need you to understand you are amazing. So I need you to find your why. I need you to find your why, right? I had somebody ask me, it's probably about a couple of years ago. They said, Officer Gray, you got to help me out. You got to help me understand something. I said, sure. What can I do for you? They said, I've seen you around campus. I've heard you do this. I've heard you do this. I've seen you do this. I've seen you do that, right? But I'm really curious about something. I said, go for it. Why do you do what you do? Nobody's ever asked me that. So is that all you got? That's it. I just want to know what's your why. I want to know why it is that you do this, why it is that you do that. I had to think about it. Because every day I've just been getting up, I go out, I do what I need to do. I take care of business. I come home at the end of the day, sleep, I eat, wake up, I do it all again. My day usually begins at about 4:30, 4:30 in the morning. Begins with the workout, begins with my training regimen. Next thing you know, I'm in the office, right? And I'm ready to rock and roll. And I understood my what, right? I understood my what. I understood what I was doing, right? So if you look at the chart, your what, that's what you do. I understood what I did, right? My job as a public information officer, my job as a self-defense instructor, right? My job as an active shooter instructor, like I understood what I did. I got training, I got instructions, I got assistance to teach me how to do what I do, right? How to do what it is that I do. So went to training. I went to more training. I went to even more training. And I learned my how. Those two things make sense. But if you look at the core of your life, if you look at the core of who you are, if you look at the core of everything that you're about, that's your why. Why is it that you do what it is that you do? What's your purpose? Right? What's your purpose? So I went back, I found that individual, and I said, hey, listen, I thought about it. I said, okay. What's your why? And I simply told him, I just don't think I have the right. He said, okay, you're going to have to explain to me that. I said, I just don't feel like I have the right to wake up every single day, to come to this campus, to serve the students that I serve, to serve the faculty that I serve, to serve the staff that I serve, to serve alongside of my colleagues, right? I just don't feel like that I have the right to show up every single day and not give you my very best. I do what I do because when I encounter people, right? When I encounter people, it's like the story about the airplane. I was on an airplane to New York late 2019, right? Just before Christmas. I had got up mid-flight, I went to the restroom, and when I went to the restroom, I opened the door, there was a piece of paper on the wall. Ordinarily, I usually don't read it. Figured it may just say something like, oh, you know, make sure to wash your hands, shut the door, all this kind of good stuff. But this time something told me to read it. And when I looked at that piece of paper, it said this: as a courtesy to the patrons who come behind you, please leave the lavatory better than how you found it. So, man, I love that, right? And that stuck with me. And that became the vision, that became the model, that became the focus for my life, right? There's gonna be someone who comes behind me. This badge, this uniform, there's gonna be somebody else who's gonna wear it. There's gonna be a whole generation of young people who are gonna come behind you, right? So I implore you, just like I implore myself, as a courtesy to those who come behind you, please leave this place better than how you found it. I believe that everybody that I serve deserves my very best. I believe that if I'm blessed to have my wife someday, I believe if I'm blessed to have my kids someday, I believe if I'm blessed to build a family someday, that every last person that I encounter, every last person who becomes a part of my life, I believe they deserve the very best of me. Even if nobody's watching. Even if it's just me at 4:30 in the morning, and it's just me, it's just the stadium stairs, and it's just me, it's just the wait, right? Even if that's it, you still deserve my very best. And that's what I'm going to give the people that I serve. As I get ready to leave you guys, I implore you, I challenge you, life, it's like the saying goes, life is about 5% what happens to you. The other 95% is how you respond to it. Challenges, situations, oppositions, they're going to come upon you. I remind you, everybody knows what to do when everything is going extremely well. But what do you do when challenges come your way? You may not be able to change the situation, but you can change your perspective. And you change your perspective, you'll change your life. Let me remind you, every last one of you is amazing. I don't need you to just hear that. I need you to know that. I need you to feel that. And I need you to believe that. And when you leave this place, I need you to go be amazing. Hey, listen, guys, I love each and every last one of you. Take care of yourself, take care of each other, and go be amazing. That's my time.